Good morning, this is Santa Eford. Can I see, are we, Ledge office, are we connected here?
Santa, this is Jerry, I need connected from Main Street.
Okay. Can I see who else is on the call?
Pete Hefner, I'm here.
Thanks, Pete.
Jeff Lambert.
Norma Holmgard is here.
Lillian Bannerman.
Hi, Lillian. Hi, Norma.
Keith Hamilton.
Leona.
Hi, Keith. Hi,
Leona Starr.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Walt Monaghan.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Hello.
Hi, good morning. This is Marcy Bish.
Good morning.
James Fields is on. I think I heard Jeff Lansing say his name, too.
Thank you, James. We'll just give it a couple more minutes. It seems like a few of our committee members are having difficulty joining in, so we'll let them try to figure that out. Appreciate your patience.
Thank you. Bye. Okay, we're still waiting. I've had a couple of people say they were having difficulty connecting, so we're going to wait just a few more minutes. Thank you. Yet. Did Marcy connect yet?
Hi, Sana. This is Marcy.
Oh, yeah, you were able to. Thank you. How about Lily?
Hi. Yes, I was able to. I just didn't use the 844, and I'm going to get right through.
Thank you, because I have a couple of people asking that, so thanks. Just a few more minutes. All right, I want to see if anyone else is able to connect. Sarah, were you able to connect?
Hi, Sana. This is Sarah Sledge. I've just gotten on.
Yay, thank you. Great.
Thanks for the tip.
Is Mary on yet?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, hi, Mary. Good morning. Thank you. Maureen, are you on the call? Jennifer Hall Jones, are you on the call? Commissioner Williams, were you able to connect? Senator Giesel or Representative Tallarico, are you on? All right, we're going to wait just one more minute and then we'll get started. Thank you for your patience. All right. We still are missing a few, but I think we're going to go ahead and get started this morning. Thank you all for being here. Kind of an aside on a personal note, last night, I think the weight of this really hit me. This is Santa this morning, and I realized what a difference what we're doing can make for our kids. And I'm trying not to be emotional this morning, but I'm like, wow, we are doing really good work, and I appreciate all of your efforts and your thoughts. And today, I want to spend today looking at the draft languages that we have under each of the categories that we're left with, and really having a thorough discussion about what those mean. Are they an idea or a recommendation that we can put in a transformational recommendation to the state board? So as we go through looking at each of these today, please keep that forefront in your mind as we have this discussion. I also wanted to ask if Lori Grassgreen, are you on the phone with us today?
I am, yes. Thanks, Anna.
Hi, Lori. Thank you so much. I just wanted to share with the committee, Lori Grassgreen is with the Alaska Association of School Boards. And she's joining us today. She was actually on the call last week, but I didn't realize she was not unmuted. But she has been working with community engagement, youth leadership, and creating systems change in Alaska and across the country, and I think internationally. Lori can share a little bit more about what she's done and her background. But she is on the call to provide information or answer questions or just give some insight as we go through our discussions. And we also have with us this morning Pat Sidmore.
Sure. And this is Todd. Pat Sidmore is the acting director for the Alaska Mental Health Board, the acting director for the Advisory Board on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, and also the acting director of the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council. Also, in Pat's spare time, he's been really an unwavering advocate for trauma-informed schools, and he's been absolutely instrumental in assisting the department as we've fashioned resources to share with districts on this topic. And so we're very pleased that he carved out some time to join us this morning. Unfortunately, he will not be able to be with us for our full three-hour convening. So if you have any trauma-informed questions, please bring those to the forefront and try to fold those into our conversation by 10 or 10:15 this morning.
All right, thank you. I want to go back now and let's do a roll call because we have had a few more people join us, I believe. James?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Keith Hamilton?
You're from rainy Kenai.
Leona Starr?
Yes, I'm here.
Lily? Hinsey? I'm not sure if I'm saying
that's correct. No, it's okay. Hinsey. Yes, I'm here.
Thanks, Lily. Jennifer Hall Jones? Senator Giesel? Representative Tallarico? Pete Hefner?
Here.
Norma Holmgard?
Present.
Laura Mulgrew?
Here.
Marcy Bish?
Here.
Commissioner Monaghan?
Yo.
Commissioner Williams? Mary McMahon?
I'm here.
Sarah Sledge?
I'm here.
Maureen Hall?
Here.
Jeff Lansing?
Here.
Lillian Bannerman?
Here.
Great. And then, of course, I'm here, Santa, and Todd again is with us. So thank you. So we've got Almost a full committee. That's great. And Jerry, you're on the phone, correct?
Correct.
Yes, and Jerry Covey's with us also today. To begin with, I would like to talk about where we're going to end up so we can focus our conversations as we get started. And we remember that our big picture goal is to identify 2 to 3 transformative ideas that will promote safety and well-being of Alaska's students. These recommendations, then, are going to be passed along to our State Board of Education with the goals from each of the other 4 committees, and then the State Board will review the recommendations and present them to Governor Walker and the legislature. And a few reminders again, we're to focus on the what, but we are starting to have these conversations, and I think part of that today we need to do is also some on the how, but we need to dream big and think about how we might transform student learning over the next decade. Remember also, we're being asked to consider a public education system change that is transformational. In other words, we have to think across the state of Alaska, what recommendation would make a transformational difference from students in urban districts, in rural districts, in for students with disabilities, for students in poverty, for low achieving students, for everyone across our system. And again, transformational change must be systemic and apply to all students, schools, employees, communities, not require resources beyond our control, and produce measurable results that can be benchmarked against higher performing states and countries. One other thing before we kind of start on our discussion, if you remember last time, Jerry Covey introduced to us some guidance for what our goals and our rationale will look like when we end up. I sent an email this morning, and I apologize for the lateness, but I sent it. It had our just very broad agenda this morning, but it also included another copy of the facilitator guidance for goal and rationale development, which gives us an example of a goal and the rationale and what we need to have prepared for the final meeting that will be on October 4th. In Anchorage. And I think each of you should have received, and we talked about it last time, but some of you were not here, we did receive and get approval for the funding to have our meeting October the 4th in Anchorage in person. So you will be receiving information about that. But by that meeting, we need to have our goal and our rationale developed so we can share that during that meeting with all the committees and have some more conversation around what the State Board may ask or the conversation with them during that meeting time. Questions or other comments? All right. Well, so as I said this morning, I want us to have thorough discussions of our current draft languages in the 3 categories that we have condensed down to, which are the trauma-informed practices, student health, and school climate. Since we have Pat Sidmore with us today, we are going to kind of start our discussion on the trauma-informed practices. And I'm going to ask him just to share a little bit about what's happening across school districts now, maybe statewide already, or across the nation. And then he would be available for questions, like I said, for a short time here. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. So in terms of trauma-informed schools, I think it's important to start with this idea that the idea of a trauma-informed school is very new, really in the last decade. It springs from the adverse childhood experience research that's about 20 years old now. And I think the key component from that research that's really informing trauma-informed schools is that childhood trauma is common. It's common across demographics. Our boards have certainly found, in working with the Department of Public Health, or the Division of Public Health, rather, that adverse childhood experiences in our adult population affect at least two-thirds of us. When we look at the National Survey of Children's Health, in a middle school or high school classroom, two-thirds of those children have been affected. We know that adverse childhood experiences are front-loaded for children, in that if we look at, again, back to the National Survey of Children's Health and their look at childhood stress or trauma, that of the entire trauma that's going to be in our 17-year-old population as they enter adulthood, half of that trauma is present when they turn three. So in other words, our children are coming into school with a high load of trauma, and this is true not just in Alaska, this is true everywhere. The adverse childhood experiences research has been done more than 650 times, the last time I checked, across the globe. I have never seen a study that showed different results from the original study 20 years ago. The more trauma, the more stress we have, the more likely we are to have poor outcomes. That being said, that's at a population level. That doesn't mean that individuals who have high trauma necessarily have the poor outcomes, and that's the hope in the work. And I will say that there is more and more research coming out that what we're looking at are changes in the brain and our stress response as being exposed to trauma, which impacts learning in this context. I think the quote that Josh Arvidsson puts out, who's the founder of the Child Trauma Center in Anchorage, which, by the way, Josh is an amazing resource. We have a world-class child trauma center, truly. But Josh has a quote that he puts in his training, which is, trauma turns a learning brain into a surviving brain. And what I think schools are starting to recognize across the country is that this is just part of what we face in the classroom every day. And you know, the more we learn about it and the more we talk to teachers, they say, well, yes. I mean, kids are coming in, they can't learn because they're hungry, or they saw someone get hit in their house, or they're chronically exposed to those things. So it's hard to learn. So the exciting research that I was recently exposed to came out of the Administration for Children and Families, who asked Duke University to do a literature review to find the one thing that we could focus on for children who are exposed to trauma. Because at schools, we're probably not going to prevent the trauma, but we're definitely going to see the results. So what they came back with, what Duke came back with, if we could focus on one thing to get in between the trauma and the poor outcomes, it's to help children focus on self-regulation. Okay, and so self-regulation are those things like being able to persevere when you face an obstacle, controlling your emotions, and I like actually another measure of it that to include, which is a child shows curiosity, which means they're out of that survival brain and actually engaged in the developmental process that they should be engaged in if they haven't been exposed to trauma. So those three things. When we first heard of the research out of Duke, we came back and looked at some of the data, and we looked at protective factors. So we looked at stress, we looked at health, we looked at protective factors, and self-regulation of about the seven or eight protective factors we looked at was by far the one that had the most impact. We subsequently also looked then at school outcomes, things like absenteeism, calls home for behavior issues, having an individual educational plan, And guess what? Self-regulation also intervened in those. So what I think what's coming out of the trauma-informed school work that's being done in Massachusetts and in Washington State and a few other areas is that we really have to work with the teachers. We really have to work with the adults in the school because it's about the interaction. And the reason it's about the interactions we have with children is that children and all of us learn self-regulation skills through other people, through relationships. There's a concept called co-regulation. And if you look this up, most of the literature is really around caregivers and infants. But if we think about traumatized children, often they present themselves developmentally at a lower level than their chronological age. And so we learn self-regulation through co-regulation, which is working with another important adult or person in our life. And just so you know, it's not just about kids. We co-regulate ourselves every day. If you don't go home to your partner at some point and say, you won't believe what happened at work today, you're missing a great opportunity to co-regulate. So, but this idea of co-regulation is central to helping children get to that point where they can learn. And so that means changing how we interact. And I spent time as a teacher. I was had an elementary ed major in undergrad and spent some time with at-risk kids. And I can tell you, co-regulation or with children is essential, and that means I as a teacher had to be regulated. And sometimes that's very hard to do because life happens, right? And so we have to figure out how to support teachers in their classroom. And this comes out of research by Walter Gilliam at Yale, which is really around early childhood work. And Walter Gilliam found that the age at which children in America are most likely to be expelled from school is age 4, right? It's preschool and pre-K. And the reason, and as he dug into this more, he also found that if a teacher, they looked at some scales on teacher mental health and stress, and if the teacher was not stressed, the likelihood of a child being suspended or expelled decreased almost to zero. So it really was about the stress and the support that the teacher had in order to do his or her job. And so I think the work, Walter Gilliam's work in early childhood is driving some of the trauma-informed school work. And what we're seeing in early childhood education is we're seeing mental health consultation for Head Starts and preschools, and mental health consultants go in, work with the adults, maybe observe the children, and then strategize with the teacher in order to change practice. But it's an ongoing process, and this is the other key piece of this. If you look at implementation science, which is the science of moving research into practice, you've got to have a means to do that, and you've got to have policies in place, and you've got to change practice. And the way to change practice is to have a reflective practice. This is common in mental health. So even if I, as a senior clinician, and I might see clients, I'm going to once a week at least have supervision with another clinician that's going to help me problem solve. We don't have this in education, but I think it's really crucial because there is no way that one person can meet the needs or understand the needs of 30 children. That's just an impossible task. So we need either, whether it's peer reflective practice or supervision, and I don't mean supervision in the sense of a hierarchy. I mean a mentor type situation where it's safe for a teacher to be able to say, you know what, I blew it with this kid today. This is what I did. What do you think? Or to go in conversely and say, I really did well, and to discuss that and see how to expand on that. I think that's the key point. We can have a lot of training, and I do a lot of training around the state, but it makes me wonder sometimes, you know, how much sticks, because schools have been described to me, and I've been in the school for 20-plus years, but schools have been described to me right now as hair on fire, right? The kids walk in, and it's hair on fire. We're racing through the day because kids have all sorts of needs and parents and teachers, and that's what it is. And so we've got to figure out a way to carve out the space to slow it down a little bit. And I will say, one of the trauma-informed school systems that we've looked at that we like at the Mental Health Board, just looking at things, is the CLEAR model. Collaborative learning for educational achievement and resilience. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, they've started to research outcomes, and the outcomes that they're seeing beyond just the reduction in teacher turnover, which of course translates into money, reduction in absenteeism, less discipline issues, is they're actually seeing some changes in reading scores. In a sample of about 1,000 kids with a control, and granted, this is them doing research on their own work, so we gotta be cautious. But still, they saw a 9% increase in reading score. So it's beginning, and this is in line with the brain science. So if we can change that culture of the school, and it seems at first like we're taking time away from instruction. But actually, I think what we're doing is we're making instruction more powerful, and we definitely have to research and show it. We can't just you can't just be, as I like to say, pixie dust and unicorns. We've got to go through and do the research and make sure, because if it's not helping instruction, then I think schools rightfully should say, why are we doing this? But we think that. That it's showing that it is, at least in the initial stages. So I think that's the important piece. And I've rambled on probably too long. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So I'm gonna just open the time now for either comments from anyone that would like to react or respond or question.
This is Mary McMahon, principal at Colony Middle School. I just want to jump right in saying everything that was shared is so on point with what we're seeing in schools. So thank you so much. Which reminds me, actually, that at Colony Middle School for the past, I've been here, this is my 11th year. One of the things that I've built into our system that's sustainable and doesn't cost money other than getting subs is once a month we do instructional tours where we go in and do that very reflective practice of taking a tour team with myself. I'm always present with the teachers because together we have this trusting relationship where we go into any classroom. All of the classrooms in our school are wide open. And we observe the teacher's practice, and then we talk about what we see afterwards, and we actually share exactly what we say in communication. We record what we say as we're talking about what we saw in each classroom and send it directly to the teacher so the teacher gets that feedback as well. We have a really good system in place, and we've invited leadership teams from around the state. A lot of Anchorage teams have come to our school to participate in this process with us. And if anyone can make it here, I am open to having just anyone come to our school to be a part of this process. We do it monthly. It's so incredibly valuable for our school culture, our climate. We've aligned it directly to the teacher evaluation, new teacher evaluation system, so teachers can really learn about the craft and move towards that exemplary status of teaching in all four domains of the Danielson model is what we use in our district. And it's one of the best things we can do to slow things down because we are working so hard with fewer resources, and the only way we can do a quality job is to work together, to be aligned with what we do, to share our expertise with each other, to open up our classrooms and really see the best of the best and talk about things. But it only works if you establish that relationship of trust, and we've been doing this for like 9 years. So it's a part of what makes our school the place it is today, which I say is transformed. It has transformed our school culture, where kids are thriving here because we are aligned with what we do. So when I share about all of those other things, what I just heard about we have to take that time for reflective practice, and we don't necessarily always need to hire an expert to come out from outside of our school. We just need to tap into the resources and the expertise within our building and create a plan for us to be able to have that time and use it wisely. And we've refined it over the years because I never want to pull an amazing teacher out of a classroom unless what they're going to be doing is going to benefit them doing even better when they go back. And so that's what we say, is this worth your time? And we collect that input, and we, you know, teachers are always like, absolutely. And so all of our staff participate once a year, and we try to encourage and have everyone take the time to participate at least twice, once each semester.
Thank you so much, Mary. Others is Jennifer, one of the parents on the committee.
And, hi, Jennifer.
Hi. What Mary said is it's wonderful to hear. It sounds like it's reflecting that high social capital that was part of the Wrong Drivers for Educational Reform. And I'm delighted to hear that that's happening. It seems like that's combined with, you know, cumulative ability and knowledge that's part of the higher human capital is what makes a really good school and informs that climate. I also want to just reflect a little bit on the speaker that we just heard, too, and going back to, I know that we've already established some priorities, but it seems like, given the research that he's describing and talking about, that, you know, putting increasing the priority of our early K, seems like that should be a higher priority than what we currently have it. I'll sign off.
Thank you, Jennifer. Other thoughts?
This is Laura Mulgrew. And, you know, Mary, I appreciate you talking about your school climate, and I wish schools across the state of Alaska were looking at a model like that. As a teacher in the classroom, I appreciate everything Pat said, and one of the things is that teacher positions have one of the highest stresses in the United States, and there's a lot of research being done on that. And again, if a teacher is going into a classroom with high stress and yet needs to participate in self-regulation and model and co-regulate, it's a very challenging job, and it's daunting to even do. And you see a higher rate of behavior with children if teachers are not being able to come to school with less stress. And one of the things that, you know, we just started school last week, and I was just telling Pat here in Juneau when I came in, he asked how school went, and I said, well, you know, our first 2 days were completely booked with professional development, and then kids came on the third day. There was no opportunity to collaborate, talk about kids that were coming in, get our classrooms even together, put our desks down off the counters, and yet we're supposed to be prepared to co-regulate with children when we're already behind the eight ball, unless we spend our own time, which teachers do, and we expect that, but basic things like getting our classrooms together. And I wonder sometimes if there could be some type of direction or mandate from DEED to say that teachers have to have X amount of collaborative time prior to students walking into a building before school starts, and during the school year, you know, X amount. I'm not talking a lot. I'm talking about maybe 3 hours before school starts. You know, just a brief, oh, I pulled the desk down, put the chairs, my cabinets are full, I've got some information on the walls, and now I'm going to talk about my students with my colleagues before they walk in the door. And I really do think that if every district could practice something similar to that in the state of Alaska, that teachers might have less stress as they start the school year, and then build that in as well during the school year somewhere. So.
So this is Pat Moore again. To respond to that, I think there is this concept of the term has just popped out of my head. I'm sorry. This idea of a parallel practice, and so if we have to practice at an administrative level what we want to have happen in the classroom. So those same standards of trauma-informed, which are about safety and empowerment and, you know, control over one's own environment, has to be true for the teachers as well as for the principal, as well as for the children, and frankly, as well as for the family. And I think that's a key component in Alaska. We have a wide variety of schools, and many of you may have seen the movie Paper Tigers, which is about this school in Walla Walla, Washington that changes its practice and gets these great results. But what they don't say in the movie is that the practice of moving into that trauma-informed school destroyed the health of the principal, because there was not the support wrapped around him in order to move it there. And so I think there has to be a framework, and this is what we see across the state, is each school, as they try to do this work, they're having to recreate the wheel. And so there's an effort from the Department of Ed right now, initial stages, and the Association of Alaska School Boards, Lori Grassgreen, who's on the phone, to really start to think about what sort of framework could be in place that schools could draw from and pick from and not have to reinvent the wheel, but still keep that local control and building control. And so I think that's an important piece. And the other thing, we have this great resource in terms of the Association of Alaska School Boards, who have been doing this community work across the state for more than 20 years through ICE, help me, Lori.
Okay, Institute for Community Engagement.
Right. And so I think they have this system of going into communities and really working with the communities and the schools, which frankly, given our turnover, especially in rural areas with teachers, the consistency needs to be the community. And so if they're on board, they're going to help and support the teachers in any sort of trauma-informed school practice in rural communities.
Thanks, Pat. This is Laurie. So, and I guess, you know, just responding to your comment, Pat, and also previous comments, I think that while we want to keep it simple because there's so much on the plates of, I mean, we're working with schools, we hear, you know, and are in the schools to see how much is being asked of school staff, and yet we also know that it's really important to have some infrastructure around the trauma-informed schools and social-emotional learning supports, and part of those supports are for the site administrators, part of those supports are for school staff, and, you know, just really having a clear roadmap around that. And part of that roadmap, in addition to the staff climate and the modeling piece for staff that seems, you know, just as important and has the you know, I think in Anchorage called the second order change, where that's really where you see the change is when the adults in the schools are able to, you know, experience that trauma-informed environment themselves as well as students. But I also think what's really important in a piece that we've been trying to bring into the work that we've been doing with districts is that community piece. And, you know, that's taken different forms in different communities, but we've, you know, in a lot of them been able to work with community and districts to have dialogues and then really incorporate that into whatever a trauma-informed school plan looks like. And I'm sure there are many ways to do it, but I think when we look at some of those models outside of the state, it's a piece that's not there, and that we know that there's just so much history in our communities related to education that piece is going to be really central to, you know, some of the trauma-informed works we do with schools and some of the components that will be important to be outlined. But I really appreciate everything folks have had to say. Thanks.
Anna, this is Jerry.
Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
Well, I too appreciate the conversation very much, and as I'm listening to the concerns and the programs that are working and the points that are being made, I keep reflecting back to Michael Fullan's work, and when he talks about the right drivers for system reform, he talks about focus, which is priority, what matters most, and where can we put our energy to get the greatest impact. He talks about deep learning, and referencing Pat's comments and Mary's example. He speaks of the power of collaboration with the workforce, that there has to be meaningful engagement and involvement at that level. And he speaks about capacity building, where the accountability is internal. It's because people have prioritized and valued certain actions and behaviors, and so they're building the capacity of everyone in the system versus external accountability, which is what we often see in our state. And of course, there is a place for external accountability, but external accountability does not drive ownership and the types of internal change that we're speaking of here. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. In that article, if everyone was not able to see that, it was attached with one of the emails that I sent you this week, and it's called The Wrong Drivers for Education Reform. As Jerry pointed out, and I think something we have to keep in our mind as we do this, and Mary shared and some other speakers this morning about how do we propose something that does not, it's not a top-down dictate, but it is a groundswell collaborative partnership that would be embraced by schools and communities to make a difference for these students. More questions, comments? Do we want to?
This is Mary McMahon. I'm so passionate about what the work we're doing right now. And I have, not only have I worked in rural Alaska, but I've worked throughout the state, and I'm from Kodiak originally. I love Alaska. I've worked here for 19 years, and I've seen what doesn't work, and I've seen what does. And I have so many thoughts to share, but I could really take up all 3 hours. So what I'm going to do is I'm all about solutions and sharing what works and simplifying things so that we can replicate it for others. And so when I've invited these teams to our school to be a part of a portion of our day, I give them what they need to go back home and make it their own and have success right away. And every school has not needed me to come to their school to do this for them. I've given them the tools with their leadership team to go and make it their own. And I've had only positive feedback of, oh my gosh, this is the best thing we've ever done. And brand new principals can do this, but it takes great leadership and it takes someone committed. But it's easy. And I've created a system that's easy. I would love to somehow showcase it throughout the state on a video just to help people get their hands around how simple yet powerful we can be when with fewer resources if we focus, like Jerry Covey says, on the right things. I'm going to send out a presentation I did at the principals conference that you guys can look through, and you'll get why I'm so excited about this, because it's grassroots, it's organic, it's teacher driven, but it's focused, because more time for teachers isn't always a good thing. I empower and honor and value teachers, and they are on the front lines, and they know that I care about them. But if we just give unstructured time to people, if they don't have a good culture and they don't have that leadership, it's a waste of time. And so I have seen what works and doesn't work. I'm going to send this out, but I just appreciate so much being on this important committee for the state.
Thank you, Mary. We appreciate you, too.
Yeah, I have a question for Pat before he goes. Pat, can you talk a little bit about Alaska-specific rates of trauma and how that's changed over time, or has it? Or?
Well, so it's difficult to know in some ways. So when we looked at the adult trauma, and we did this through a health survey called the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey. It's done in every state. About 30 states have asked questions about childhood trauma now. And we asked for 3 years, so we have a sample size of about 11,000. So it's a very good sample size. And we so when we looked at the adults by generation, so early adulthood, 18 to 24, you know, breaking it up into four or five different scenarios, what we saw was that, and Alaska overall has higher rates of adverse childhood experiences than most states. I would say, I haven't looked recently, but probably all states. But what we found when we compared our generations to other generations in other states is we seem to be holding our higher adverse childhood experiences in our older adults, and that our younger adults are more comparable to the younger adults in other states. Now, there's a lot of variability in that because we've got in-migration, but it really starts to turn around about the time of oil. And so whether that's the in-migration, the better jobs, better social services, you know, more money for schools and everything, it's hard to say. But clearly something is changing. We just don't have long-term impacts for children. I mean, we have so there's an epidemiologist at Public Health that you all need to get to know. If you haven't seen his work, you will and you should. His name is Jared Parrish, and he is following a group of children that were born in 2009 and 10 and 11. So what he's found, and he's starting to link data, so all these children were surveyed, their mothers were surveyed at birth, and we have we have information about prenatal and postnatal, and these children are now six, or seven, rather, and here's what he's learned so far by linking that data from that original survey of those children at birth, and by the way, it's 3,500 kids, it's a very good sample. All the technical statistical stuff is right in line. What he's found is that by age 7, 31% of those kids have had a report of harm to OCS. So we've always known that, you know, about 10% of the kids have a report each year, which is important information, you know, to staff OCS and to have a sense. But now we know that by age 7, 31% of the kids are going to have a report of harm. What's interesting is that he's now able to go back and he's looking at those prenatal questions, and he's able to link what's going on prenatally that leads to or that is linked, that is a little bit predictive or a lot predictive of having that report of harm. And he's starting to be able to tease that out. Well, ultimately, it would be he needs some more resources, and we're working on that with him. Not a lot of resources, oddly enough, because all these data are sitting out there. They just need to be linked. But if you start to think about what can we do in terms of melding in Medicaid data, which he's sitting on right now, or think about this, school data. Think about the developmental profile. Could we predict how a child is going to be ready for school, or their third grade reading scores early on? This starts to give us information that's actionable. And more than that, if we can link in, and we think we can, early intervention program results, we can start to see, are they changing trajectories? Are they, you know, does a stint in the infant learning program change the directory for school readiness? I mean, we have small reports that say absolutely it does, but this would start to look at some other things. So we're starting to get a sense of Even with this small sample, indeed it's very common, but we don't have long-term links. But we've started at least in 09 to be able to get some of that.
Okay, thanks, Pat.
Yeah.
And I think what Pat just shared, that information goes back to, I think, Jennifer's comment about the early intervention piece. And right now, not within the purview of the K-12 system, and how do we tap into those partnerships? And I don't know, Marcy, maybe you could share a little bit about, you know, OCS, and we've had the conversations about how do we interact with those children? How do we build that partnership with OCS and some of the foster children and the children with the high reports of harm that we're dealing with, or that schools are dealing with?
Hi, Shana. This is Marcy, and I just want to echo and support Jennifer's recommendation for elevating the early learning / intervention priority. I also agree that it should act, you know, in my opinion, it should be its own category, and it's so important. It crosses all these different categories that all these different committees are working on right now for recommendations. Some of the things, you know, in talking, like you were saying, about the Office of Children Services and those children, you know, within the Child Care Program Office, we have a strong partnership with the Office of Children Services and provide funding to help support children participating in the Child Care Assistance Program. So we're starting to be able to, you know, there's a strong partnership there, and gosh, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. We're with the new Child Care and Development Block, the reauthorization grant. There's several new requirements under child care that are impacting child care facilities across the state, and some of those have to do with increased health and safety training for child care providers across the state in a wide variety of different training areas. There's also requirements that tie into expulsion, because we cannot pinpoint right now the specific percentage of children in child care or early child care programs that are being expelled from programs, but we do believe that that's a high percentage. And so through some of this new requirements that are being put in place, child care providers will need to report to our office when they have children that are experiencing behavioral issues and that they're considering expelling them. So that way we can help link them up with resources in partnership with THRED, Alaska's Child Care Resource and Referral Network, you know, to help give those early childhood practitioners the training and resources they need to help, you know, guide that child and work with that family. So those are some of the different requirements and things that are being put in place. And I think with the Alaska Developmental Profile, it's my understanding based upon last year that there's 68% of the children that are entering the K-12 system that are not ready for school. And so this is where that early intervention piece comes into play. I mean, these Head Start programs, child care programs, military, tribal child care, this is the pipeline that's, you know, feeding these children into the K-12 system. And so if the resources and preventative measures can be taken in those early years, which we all know are very critical years, more children will come to school prepared and ready for school. But there's a lot of awareness and education that needs to go on to help support that.
Thanks, Marcy.
Yeah. This is Todd. You know, I just got back from Washington, D.C. for a Project Aware meeting sponsored by SAMHSA, and there were some really interesting pieces on school discipline there, and looking at, there's some, in California, for example, there's some huge districts that have just enacted practices where they're not suspending any students before, you know, grade 4. So just having this fundamental understanding that trauma and other factors really are driving those behaviors that need to be addressed within the classroom setting. And I think that that's really exciting work. And I can't swear, but I do believe I just heard that the Anchorage School District is removing willful disobedience from their list of reasons that warrant suspension. And it's really, I think, driven by that same kind of epiphany, that underlying understanding that there are some behavioral expressions in the classroom and in schools that need to be addressed, need to be corrected, but probably, need to happen in the school rather than out. And that's all exciting work that I think is tied to what we're talking about.
This is Jennifer again. Policy, legislative, regulatory kinds of language that's helping support the teachers to do that, because what we've been talking about in terms of the idea of co-regulation, and there would need to be some more professional development for teachers to feel supported to be able to work with those kids, because that's a whole different paradigm.
Yeah, I there are some large laws that require, for example, all school districts to have written school disciplinary policies. But I don't know that I would say that those have that level of detail. They certainly don't require specifically, professional development on things like trauma informed. But those are things that could fit underneath it very readily.
I think what we're hearing as I look, Todd had a great recommendation yesterday afternoon. Both of us were talking about the meeting this morning, and I had sent out prior the categories and kind of the draft language and where we were, but he had taken it and put it on one sheet. So I sent you this morning one page that says summary of our current draft languages, and it has kind of where we stand under each of the categories. And it's amazing to me, our conversation today still centers around really what we've got in these draft languages right now to look at the restorative practices, the discipline piece of, and it was amazing to me, Todd's group is working on an equity-based e-learning course that talks about the disproportionate rate that the students, mainly the students we're talking about, are given out-of-school suspensions, and that they're kicked out of school. And it's like, well, how can you work with a child that's not there? And so the whole restorative practices piece that I wish Commissioner Williams was with us again to talk, and I had a conversation with him, maybe it was last week or the week before, where he is still he is so passionate about keeping these kids in school, because statistics show that those kids are going to be the kids showing up in the juvenile justice system, and I'm sure Commissioner Monaghan could speak to probably then in the adult correctional system at some point. So that, we're still talking about. There it sits as one of our draft languages. Professional development on the trauma-informed piece. All the partnerships that need to happen, especially around the student, those birth to kindergarten age that our teachers, our school system, and the public system in Alaska really doesn't touch, but how can we affect those partnerships to make a difference there? All the research around the early intervention pieces and what a difference that would make for a child coming into school prepared and with a good mental health plan in place. Our school climate, as Mary talks about, and then the student health piece, the counseling that goes with all of that. So, I'm just going to, like I said, that's on one sheet for you to have, and we'll continue this conversation. I think Pat's going to have to leave us here, so I wanted to see if there are any more questions or comments for him before he leaves us today.
This is Walt Monaghan.
Yes, Commissioner.
I totally agree with everything that everybody's contributed so far. And I certainly believe that you have to prepare the environment, the bed, if you will, that for us to think a proper launch, but is there a plan to eventually start to address some of the curriculum to include some of these things so the kids actually can learn about it instead of just being receiving it, so to speak?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, there are laws in place. Like that. There's one law around health education and health education curriculum that's on the books in Alaska, but it presently, it's a voluntary law. It's a law that encourages districts to have a K-12 comprehensive health education curriculum that would include things like social-emotional learning, that would include conflict resolution, really addressing some of these core components. But again, it's not mandated. It's encouraged.
This is Lori and Graf Green. And the last time we did a preliminary survey, it was about half of the school districts in Alaska were maybe to two-thirds of the school districts in Alaska were incorporating something, either around social-emotional skill building or some similar type supports through integrated classrooms or health education. So I would say it's not evenly being integrated into schools. So, and in some districts, it really can vary a lot from classroom to classroom, too. So
this is Pat, and I think for any trauma-informed school initiative, having a social-emotional learning piece within the school system is foundational. That needs to be there. That being said, I think it's important to remember that it's really about relationships. If we're really going to give these skills to children, it's not going to be a lesson. It's going to be an interaction, a mini interactions actually, and so absolutely need the foundational social emotional piece that's essential. But to take it to that next level, it's really about changing the one-on-one interactions between adults and children first, and obviously everyone in the school district. So that's the piece that I think is really important in order to be successful.
And Pat, I just wanted to support that too, where we know social-emotional skill instructions has academic and behavioral gains in and of itself with that explicit instruction piece, but really the most gains are approaches that have really transformed just the mindset of the way schools are operating and the environments in which students are attending schools. And so there's the instructional piece, but it really fits within a broader context.
Absolutely, and SEL and DBIS really are probably the two most prominent school-wide approaches to that.
What's PBIS?
Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports.
Okay.
So this is Laura. Our categories, and maybe I'm overlooking something, but I think one of the things I would like us to consider in finding a place in one of our categories to also focus on teacher stress and how do we reduce that so teachers can be healthier to co-regulate. And I'm reading these, and there's a lot of focus on the schools and the climate and giving professional development, but yet when you hear the importance of having relationships, it's difficult to have a relationship when you're not in a place where you can have a relationship because you have to get to another class. Or I'm not saying change schedules. I'm just saying somehow how do we reduce the stress in the state of Alaska that is actually recognized, nationwide as one of the highest stress jobs. I think it's the second highest stress job at this point. How do we reduce that so we can have healthy relationships? And so I'm not sure where we'd want to put it or if we want to put it, but I really would encourage us to look at that information and the research on the amount of stress.
Yeah.
And Laura, I'm not sure if this is what you're talking about, because it sounds like you're talking about the just, you know, daily stress of that position, but any really solid trauma-informed school approach, I think, really is supporting secondary trauma and also all of the pieces that school staff are interacting with on a daily basis. And so I think that piece is integrated into really solid approaches. So.
And when I said that, I wasn't actually, and I appreciate that, and you're right, so, you know, good interventions for trauma-informed schools does take it into consideration. However, I'm feeling like it's missing as far as in the document making it acknowledge that there is a priority, there could be a priority, and it's not just the day-to-day, it's the overall, the time for collaboration. And when I say collaboration, it wasn't just preparing your classroom, but I mean actually sitting down with your colleagues and talking about what's working, not working, for the whole school as a whole. And I know that comes into practice with well-informed, trauma-informed practices with schools that are actually implementing those practices. I was just trying to get it captured somewhere in our document.
Sure.
No, I don't know if there's a place for that, you know, under our health assertion. We had talked about a little bit about the whole child model that the Centers for Disease Control pushes out. And, you know, it's got this 10-component wheel, and mm-hmm. employee wellness is a big piece of that. And it really is ensuring that the needs of our educators are met, that there is that room for partnership, for collaboration, for preparation. I don't know if we'll push that forward or not, but it lives partially there, and it lives also in some of the stuff that Pat's been putting together for the department under trauma-informed response.
This is
when I look at I was thinking like school climate area, you know, in order to have a healthy school climate, that has to be healthy as well.
In a good
so opportunity has to be provided, or should be provided, so staff can collaborate to plan that, you know, something along the line.
Jerry, you were going to say something.
Yes. Backing up to Pat's comments about the relationship and Mary's earlier comment about what's happening in her school, the data is very clear in high-performing education systems all around the world that they do depend upon quality relationships. They do rely on significant collaboration opportunities and deep learning and ownership that involves teachers, that involves other people in the school. And those systems prioritize these things. And they, because they're high priority, they receive greater attention than other things, and people get involved. Just like Mary has described, there's no rule that Mary would have to do this in her school. It's something that they prioritize. So we're seeing that in other systems where they identify as priorities. And I really appreciate the need to ensure that teachers have this same opportunity to grow and learn and be part of this and don't feel pressured and stressed into situations that deny them this opportunity. At the same time, I find it hard for systems to legislate and regulate these types of circumstances, because it's impossible to legislate or regulate or dictate a quality relationship. Somehow, we have to come to grips with what matters most for our students, what matters most for our workforce, and translate that into a collaborative effort that addresses the needs of everyone involved. Thanks.
All right, Jerry. I think with that big overwhelming thought, no, I'm going to let us have a break here, but I think I'm going to make it 15 minutes. It's about 10:15 here, so at 10:30, let's all come back, but I'm going to give you an assignment that you take where we are with all the draft languages and let's come back together and see if, you know, Laura's proposed this other piece that maybe is missing somehow, or have we covered now with hearing kind of this general conversation, do we have all of our pieces, and how do we move them about or start thinking about what the recommendations might look like? And we can still continue to have discussions on kind of each of our the language pieces. So as you take this break, let's think through those large kind of overwhelming questions about getting our arms around what this might look like, as Jerry talked about, since we can't necessarily legislate or dictate some of the things we've talked about, how can we encourage or put in place something that would be embraced across our district? So, comments before we go for a few minutes? All right, thank you. We'll be back at 10:30. All right, welcome back. I think I have 10:30, so I hope everybody's able to join us again. And I'm going to ask, because we keep getting a little feedback noise here, so if you're not speaking, just make sure your phone is on mute. Thank you. So I want to focus this back again, like I said, on either the one-page sheet or if you have the three-category sheets, the trauma-informed practices, school climate, and the student health, and kind of the six recommendations or draft language that we have right now. We spent a lot of time on the trauma-informed piece, which I think we all agree. I think that's been a pretty unanimous conversation that this is very important and will make a difference for our students because we know, I think, and I'm probably biased, but Todd and I were talking at the break there, how we feel like the work of this committee is foundational to any other work that's going to happen because if children do not come to school safe and feeling good about themselves, how can they learn or do any other pieces? So I'm so strongly committed to coming out of this with what's going to make a difference for those children. So, but I thought, let's look at the other two categories, school climate and student health, and the language that we have there. And if anyone wants to speak to those two pieces or think about, could these be included in anything else? Are we missing something else? Thinking about, Laura stated the whole teacher stress part, which under school climate, we talk about professional development of staff. Does that really incorporate that conversation about how to address the teacher level of stress and possibly secondary trauma that they may be experiencing in some way? And I think I'd like to, Norma, I think you're on the line, and I'd like to hear from the perspective, your perspective from dealing in a rural setting for students, how this might all apply or what is happening right now that you might know or be aware of in some of our rural schools around this conversation.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. So I school climate is to me is the cornerstone of turning our schools around, but school climate involves community as well. And I know here it talks about wellness and health, and that's not my picture when I think of school climate. When I talk about school climate and I think of school climate, I think about how students interact with each other and how teachers interact with students and how we choose our words so that they're not causing students or others to be defensive. So that we're always, it's always a team environment, and that there's no school climate gene. People aren't born knowing how to do this. It's a learned activity and it's an observable. And it's a plan in schools. And I know a lot of schools use the PBIS approach. That's not my favorite approach, but that doesn't mean it's not a good approach. That there are processes for doing things and that it's transparent. Signs are on the walls and kids are teaching kids and our student councils are leading the charge and our teachers all speak the same language and support the same things. And but it has to be it's a school-wide philosophy. And I in rural Alaska, as Mary certainly knows, what many of you do, our schools are so short-staffed and people are so overwhelmed that they don't know where to start and they don't know what to do. And the reason that I I am not a big supporter of PBIS is because it is so cumbersome. And so by the time people learn and get this process in place and then all the pieces of it, they're all gone. And you have to start over so you never get past go, really. And so I think that there are other methods and other strategies and other overlays for schools that once school becomes a safe and supportive and nurturing environment, then we can get on with the other things. And certainly trauma-informed schools, that whole movement provides knowledge to facilitate that. But there are certain doables that have to happen in schools. Mary has talked about some of the things that she did in her school because that's what her school needed, and it needed to be time with staff and staff rallying around those things. And so in rural Alaska, in order for in my opinion, schools to get better, there has to be a very clear, doable process. And then an expectation that we do it. So, you know, we philosophize really well. We are so good at that, but we never get off the stump. And so that's really what we need to do, in my opinion, in my school here in Chivac and the three village schools that I worked with in the last couple years. The need was the same, and because the people coming in are oftentimes don't have a lot of experience, that's not where they start. They need the toolbox, and if we could create that toolbox and then provide support as folks become part of it, and that toolbox includes tools for the community to be part of us, I think school climate changes. So I school climate to me is the keystone to what we're doing.
Thanks, Norma. Anybody else want to talk to the language around the school climate piece, or can that be revised to in some way that would incorporate what Norma's talked about or other thoughts around that?
Hi, this is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
I think what's interesting is, you know, some principals get it and some principals don't. And I think they're the drivers of a school. And so I think what would be really important, I keep hearing this, you know, a framework or a roadmap of, you know, have you thought of this? What about this? How would this go in if you were going to create a positive school climate? You know, and kind of, for example, somebody mentioned the hair on fire when kids come into school. You know, one thing, everybody has something they've done. I'll just share one thing we did. We moved our silent reading right to the morning, very beginning of the day. And that allows kids to kind of come in. They have 20 minutes to read, you know, download, you know, just calm down, center, if you will. Our teachers read as well. They don't jump right into instruction, so they have time to kind of think and reflect and read and just get back into learning. You know, if there are some steps, you know, a roadmap, if you will, of how principals can go through this process of developing a great school climate. For example, in our school, we used PBIS for many, many years, and it was great, but we have a very consistent staff, and our behavior went way, way down, whereas other schools, that may not work. But if we had a roadmap of suggestions, you know, have you thought of this? You know, that, they might be able to plug it in and go, okay, I didn't think of this. And that may be one way to help principals with school climate across the state where they can plug in what they think is important. Because really, we're talking about that full-on article of building capacity, and that's where that needs to come from.
Thank you.
Jeff, I want to just add to what Jeff said, and I so strongly believe in all that's being shared. Especially because we can't add things that take more time. We don't have enough time. We hit the ground running. And the idea that we share ideas with one another of what to do the first days of school, you know, opening day, what, you know, here's some things that I've done that have been powerful. I mean, we've all done things that haven't worked. We won't share that. We will share the things that that are the best of the best and really simple solutions that get you deep and sustainable and meaningful outcomes. There are, and it's just a matter of, I was talking with Santa before this conversation, that it's not for principals. I truly don't believe that anyone got into this work to be a school leader. Well, hopefully not, because it was going to be something they could slack off on. It's a big job, and we usually started it for the right reasons. We get caught up in being overwhelmed, and I've seen so many principals that are lacking the skill, and there's just so much hitting them at once that they don't even know how to be proactive. They're just being reactive to the day, and the day is running them versus them having a plan. When really, if we just share these ideas with one another, and somehow do it in a way where it's quick, it's efficient, it's here's some, you know, a 2-minute burst of great ideas, just to get things going, because in our schools we do have to make it our own, like Norma said. We have our own culture, and every school is so different, and the needs of every staff member are so different, but yet there are some very common things that are happening at my school that also could very well happen and should happen at the small school in Chivac. So I do know that there's really good practices that we could share across the board that would help one another.
And Santa, this is Lori Grass-Green. I had a couple thoughts, and I know I hadn't been involved in the earlier conversation, so I just wanted to share a couple quick things. So ASB administers the School Climate and Connectedness Survey, which I know many of the folks on the call participate in. And I think it kind of aligns with what Norma was saying. When we think about what we mean by school climate, we look at these different components, or we think of them as scales in the survey, but maybe around the caring adults and that relationship piece that we were talking about earlier in the trauma-informed, or it may talk about peer climate. And so one of the things when I was looking through things, and maybe I missed it, was really kind of defining what we meant about school climate, or what this group meant about school climate, because, you know, in our scales, we have a cultural connectedness scale, we have a community support scale. So there's all these pieces that kind of do help lay out a roadmap a little bit. And I know one thing that as we moved on to a new platform this year, districts have access to the playbook, but the playbook, it gives you tools for these different areas, and the playbook has tools, but a lot of those are national, and so one of the things that we are working on this year that might fit into this well is just trying, we know that there's so many places to shine light on schools and school districts in Alaska, and trying to share, you know, some strategic approaches under different components of school climate. And so I just wanted to put that out there, one that from an, you know, outsider not having been a part of the conversation, that I thought it could be helpful to, you know, the definition of school climate that I saw there was related to more the physical, social, and emotional well-being, which kind of made sense, but I know that there's a lot of different ways that everyone talks about school climate, and maybe it was worth clarifying at some point, and also just that collection of resources that it sounds like people would be really interested in.
Thanks, Lori. Yes, we've got some past documents where we had lots of comments about the school climate, and we included some of that information you were just talking about from AASB School Climate Connectedness Survey, and what that
the pieces of it, the most recent reports on it,
right,
try to help frame that.
Right.
Great. I don't want to make people take a step backwards, but I did send you the public link if anyone's interested in the statewide results to you and Todd, and also I know the survey that AASB has is just one example of a tool like that. So.
Right. So I don't want to cut off conversation, because truly this is what I want this meeting to be. It's lots of discussion. But I think we're talking about action steps, which we can put together as part of our recommendation, but I'm still, what is the overarching language that, again, not the how-to piece, but the what, that would encompass the school climate? Or I guess I still want to hear from everyone, and maybe we just go through each of the priorities under the trauma-informed practices and say, yes, we want a recommendation around this, or this can be folded into another piece, and then work through those and think about, so again, I guess I'm trying to, the how conversation is great, and we need to have it, because that, you know, I'm hearing a lot of that conversation, so I think we want to maybe include with our recommendation some action plan to talk about a toolbox or other pieces that we think should be considered by schools, but it would give them options to look at and for the state board to understand how this might play out within a district. But I still think we have to look at the transformative language piece. So any suggestions about how does the group want to go? Do you want to talk about each of the priorities or all the language and go through those? Or
hi, this is Jennifer. I'm just wondering, just to go back before we go into the process here, what about under school climate, and instead of just talking about SEL stuff and a wellness plan, but including or adding the collaboration piece that we've been talking about, and making, you know, naming it, identifying the idea of that collaboration among teachers to increase instructional practices and learning, and, you know, to tie in that relational piece between, I don't have the right language like you guys do, but to tie in the relational piece between the student engagement part and the instructional practices of teachers. And it seems like if we name it, if we identify it, then, and I don't know exactly what that would look like, but that would be the first step to allowing some sort of transformational change. And then regarding our process, the idea of going through it one by one sounds good.
Jennifer, are there other thoughts?
Has anybody ever, this is Jeff, compiled any data on which districts allow collaborative time?
I'm not aware of anything. Todd's shaking his head. I don't know. Jerry, do you have any information on that, Jerry? I don't think so.
I do not.
This is Norma. I believe that the priority schools in Alaska and the focus schools are required to do early release once a week for teacher collaboration, PLC conversations, those types of things. But those are for schools that are our lowest performing schools.
And this is Mary, and I have been in schools that have had that time, and I've been in schools that have been very unhealthy and had that time, and it just makes things worse. And so I want to get back to that, you know, that's a great option. I mean, if you have a healthy school culture with strong leadership and a team that's working together, it's that time is so valuable because it's targeted and focused, and it's well-used time. But I think that the language and what we're doing, you know, one of the things I hope that will be considered is, I know that in the ESSA plan there was talk about a 3% or something set aside of Title II funds, and I don't even know if that's available anymore. I don't even know if we can depend on funding at all. But that would be targeted directly at principals of schools for professional development in these important areas. So if the Department of Education said for school climate that we will have you know, something statewide where it's, you know, it's important for principals to have this time to work together to gain the knowledge to become the most effective leaders they can be for their schools, that would take care of a part of it. Teachers obviously need that support, but if you have a leader that doesn't have an idea of what they're doing, that the principals or the teachers in that school, the best teachers in that school, are so frustrated. And I just see that over and over again where the teachers are so grateful when a leader values their time and creates a plan for their school that gains, you know, that gives them some way to slow things down so they can be together in a way that maximizes the outcome for kids. I don't know what kind of language we need to put in that statement, but I agree. It needs to just be language that comes from this committee. Like Jerry said, we can't mandate the process, but we can actually say what the process is, but we can't tell people how to do it or demand on what they're going to do, because every there needs to be that buy-in from everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. From my last reading of our draft ESSA, there is still the pot of the 3%, and I think we are trying to target for leadership and principals in particular, leadership for development.
Very happy to hear that.
I'm just going to jump in real quick as Jeff again. I think one of the most valuable experiences I ever had was when we had the Alaska Coaches Project for principals. Is that what it was called, Mary?
Yes, that's it. It was valuable. There were some things that really worked well with it that I saw and some things that didn't work well, and that is sometimes those new principals were pulled out of their buildings so much that they just started to feel like they were drowning. So it all depends, like you said, on that, the right kinds of support.
Right.
All right, so maybe I ask for maybe this is a vote. I don't know. Maybe we go around and just let everybody comment about, so we're right now talking about the school climate. Do we want to leave this as a separate, to draft some language, transformation, expectation around the school climate piece, separate, as a separate recommendation for this committee? So I'm going to go around and just ask for a yes or no, that everyone either agrees that this is an important enough piece that we want to draft a recommendation around school climate to encompass these pieces we've been talking about this morning. James? Keith?
I'm thinking yes. It's not something that I would die over, but I think it would be helpful. I think it's a better move, and I'm in that direction right now thinking about it, yeah.
Leona? Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I had to find where my mute button was. Yes, I'd say yes.
Okay, thanks. Leona?
I'd say yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Jennifer?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes, of course.
Laura?
Yes.
Marcy?
Yes.
Commissioner Monaghan?
Can you just call me Walt?
Yes, sir, I will. Walt?
Okay. Yes.
Mary?
1,000 times over, yes.
Sarah?
Yes.
Maureen?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Lillian?
Yes.
All right, so we have an overwhelming consensus there to do that. So what I've heard so far under school climate, let's talk a little bit about, so we had this language
Every school should have a wellness plan complete with social, emotional, behavioral, physical domain. These plans should contain clearly articulated action steps for establishing a positive and supported school environment, include technology use policies and practices that promote better student focus on education and student inclusion, and identify the professional development staff need to implement all facets of the plan. How or do we think this needs to be adjusted? And I guess this is more, if you've got thoughts right this minute, throw them out. If you think to adjust this language or think about this to bring to the table for the next meeting, is this a transformational? And again, we wanted to try to include some piece for the teacher, principal, leadership, collaboration efforts. To also be a piece of this. So any thoughts or comments people would like to share right now around either changing this language, adding to it, or like I said, for the next meeting, we need to figure out the process, and this is so hard on the phone, I don't know if we want to think about maybe a small subgroup to take on this recommendation to work toward language and rationale for the next meeting for the entire group to look at. Maybe some thoughts about the process for the next step.
Santa, this is Jerry. In terms of process, some of the other groups are doing what you just described. They're finding volunteers from the committee to convene and work on draft language. And then they're posting it back on Smartsheet for everyone to review and comment on. And then when the groups reconvene at the next meeting, they can have access to the new draft language, to any written guidance or comments that committee members share, and kind of pick it up from there and refine it. So that is an option for you. Thanks.
Okay, thoughts around the process?
This is Sarah, and I actually think that's a really great idea to go offline to discuss the school climate category, and I would love to be involved in that.
Okay, great. So maybe what we do is, can I hear if anyone has objections to having maybe separate groups as we work through, let's go ahead and work through each of these and see where we all can coalesce around where we want to have a recommendation, and then maybe we could talk about who would like to volunteer or participate to be on each of those groups to craft that language and rationale. Do I hear objections to that?
This is Maureen, and I said yes, but I want to say a yes, but I still feel that the health and the school climate are all tied into becoming trauma-informed, that, so I'm kind of struggling a little bit with these things being separate. It just feels like it's all the same kettle of fish that we're dealing with here, but I'm not an education expert here, so...
No. Conversation around that, because we have talked about how, all of these pieces kind of feed into the trauma-informed piece. Other thoughts around that?
This is Mary. I hear you loud and clear, and I agree. However, I think it really needs to be trauma-informed practices are definitely a priority right now amongst many schools, and they're getting training and leadership teams are falling in place. But I think the trauma-informed practices and school climate, while they're the same, they're different. And I think it's important to say school climate is a priority because academics have been such a priority for so long that some schools tend to focus too much on that and too little on school climate, and everything directly impacts academics when it starts with that school climate piece. Trauma-informed practices are certainly a critical part of school climate, but I just said that saying school climate is something we can all grab a hold of in a way that's different from combining it with trauma. I don't want to water it down. That's just my input.
Yeah, this
is Norma, and I certainly see the connection as well. However, that's like looking at the Grand Canyon and you can't take it all in, and we really need to deal with it in pieces. And if we put all of our eggs in that one basket and that basket gets dropped, they all break. And so I think it's really important that we take a look at smaller chunks and address them, because that's how we're going to have to move forward anyway. It's not an all at once. And so I really think keeping them separate will allow us to create real change, because we're dealing with some smaller pieces.
Okay. Any other comments?
This is Lori in our office. I mean, we've wrestled with that because it's work that we've been involved in, and we see this overlap kind of in a Venn diagram kind of way, where you can't have trauma-informed schools without working on the school climate, and trauma-informed schools certainly part of school climate, but there's pieces that are outside of each circle too, you know, where there's some positive school climate pieces that you may be working on that may not always fit within the trauma-informed school priorities. And so I think there's some components that overlap but are also very separate.
Thanks, Lori. All right, so I think what I hear, again, unless I hear objections, that we'll go ahead and keep the school climate as a separate, and we'll come back and talk about who might want to be on that committee. Let's drop down to the student health language that we have at this point in time and share thoughts about this. Do we want to keep this language again to craft a recommendation around, or we really haven't had a lot of conversation about the student health, the counseling and health services. So any comments or thoughts about this? Again, remembering we need to end up with two or three really strong recommendations. So thoughts around the student health piece. Let me read that in case people don't have that in front of them. Our current language around student health: strengthen K-12 counseling and health services in Alaska's public schools by expanding the number of school nurses, counselors, and social workers in schools, as well as by deepening partnerships with local health care organizations. The physical and mental health, psychological needs of all students are not being adequately supported equitably in all schools.
That says it pretty clear and very important, because nurses are being cut. I think Maureen might want to speak to this one.
Well, Maureen here down in Juneau, and I just want to say that in our district, I see the stress of the staff increase when you take nursing services out of the building, and it would be the same with counselors. You know, the teachers have one less expert to turn to. Well, I won't say expert, but partner in meeting the needs of those kids. And if the kids have a major health issue that's directly impacting their ability to be in the class, and you have no to do that. I just think from my perspective and what I've seen, so the challenge being how do we help support that out in the rural areas? How do we help those the staff in rural areas be able to have space.
This is Jerry. I just wanted to speak to the collaboration theme that is in this recommendation as it stands. And again, if we go back and look at high-performing education systems in other countries or other states or other districts, we see collaboration is at the forefront of the work that's being done. And there's simply no way around that because there are so many agencies and so many resources that are needed that no one has control of all of them. So your collaboration theme, I think, is a very strong component of this and, again, is what we see consistently in high-performing school districts.
Santa, this is Marcy. I also just wanted to add, I think this is really important as well, and I would like to recommend possibly changing, revising the language just a little bit to add mental health in the opening line. Perhaps say strengthen K-12 health / mental health services in Alaska public schools. I think it's important to see that health or even say physical health / mental health so that they're broken up and clear, emphasizing both.
Thanks, Marcy. Go ahead.
This is Lillian, and I just, being a student in high school, I wanted to talk about how important what she just said was, saying that it needs to be health and mental health right in the beginning. Because before I moved to Alaska, I lived in California, and my school did not have a nurse at all, and we did not have professional counselors of any kind. So if I was feeling bad or sick, I just tried to go through the day hoping that I'd feel better because I didn't have a nurse to go to. Whereas here at my school, even though I have the opportunity to go to either my nurse or to the teen health center, and my nurse is actually Nurse Maureen Hall, who's on the call with us, and so I can go to her or the teen health center, and they offer counseling for free, which means if there's a family that can't pay for a therapist, that child has a place to go and speak to someone and not feel alone. Or if they don't have the money they need to go to a doctor, they also offer free health physicals around the sports season. So being in high school and having friends that can't afford certain things, I think offering mental health and physical health services in the school is the most important way to help a child, because if they can't focus in school, they're not going to be able to learn anything.
Thank you, Lillian.
This is Pete Hefner here in Cordova. One of the things that we've done, interestingly, thinking about nurses and such in the districts and the cost, one of the things that we've been working on is peer mentoring groups. Students talk to other students also sometimes before they will speak to an adult, and developing peer mentoring programs throughout the state might be a thought.
Thanks, Pete. All right, I'm going to do the same thing. I think I'm going to do a roll call and ask for a vote on keeping a separate recommendation for crafting language around the student health language that we have with, again, identifying a group that would work on the transformative language and the rationale behind this. So a yes or no vote that we keep this in on our list. James?
Yes.
Keith?
Was that a Pete or a Keith?
Keith, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I apologize. My phone cut out here. I missed about the last sentence that you said.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said we're taking a vote again whether to keep the school health language as a separate recommendation that we want to identify a team to work on.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I heard the last part of that. Yeah, I'm saying yes at this point. Again, our role here is to get down to a couple of large macro view, and it may have to find its way out later on, but I'm in it for today still. I think we're still at that point.
Thanks, Keith. Leona?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Jennifer?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Laura?
Yes.
Marcy?
Yes.
Walt?
I'm actually a little hesitant on this one. So put me down to the maybe.
Okay, gotcha. Mary?
Yes, especially with the mental health discussion in addition to some of those changes.
Sarah?
Yes.
Maureen?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Lillian?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I think we're looking at maybe a good breaking point again for a minute, and then we're going to come back and tackle this big trauma-informed practices piece. So over the break here, please look at the four priorities that we have. Let's think about, can these be condensed or prioritized, or how do we want to bite off this chunk of what we have listed within the trauma-informed practices? And I think I got them in. I think I'm going to read these quickly before we go on a break. So if you don't have this in front of you, our priority one was the restorative practices. Institute a research-based restorative practices approach to school discipline in Alaska's public schools. This approach would require a strategic rewriting of school disciplinary policies. Priority two was the professional development. Provide professional development on trauma-informed practices to all individuals pursuing Alaska teaching certificates, as well as those currently certificated and employed by an Alaska school district, so all schools can implement trauma-informed practices. The third priority was partnerships. Expand partnerships among state departments and other agencies to strengthen and expand the resources, data available to support Alaska schools in becoming more trauma-informed, addressing the safety and well-being related components of Alaska's chronic absenteeism. Attendance challenges must be a central part of this partnership's work. And priority four, early learning intervention. Evidence-based early learning intervention programs are essential components to optimal educational outcomes as they foster relationship skills and foundational learning skills that ease the transition from home into K-12 education. So over the break, think about how we bite this piece off, and I'd also to ask you to think about, as we break up into the smaller subgroups to consider drafting our language and rationale, which committee you would like to participate on. So we're about at 11:15, so let's take 15 minutes to digest that and think about where you would like to participate on a subcommittee. And we'll come back at 11:30. Questions, thoughts before we take a break? All right, thank you. All right. I think I have 11:30. I think everybody's clock's probably a little bit differently, but the one I'm looking at here in Juneau. So I want to welcome everyone back and take a deep breath and see how we tackle trauma-informed practices and the priorities here. So, and I want us to, so we have probably about 20 minutes to talk through this piece, and then I want to save the last 10 minutes to talk about who wants to be on which committee to try to focus on the draft language and rationale for each of our recommendations. So would anyone like to talk to any of the priorities under the trauma-informed practices?
This is Pete. One thing I'd like to mention is under professional development, that needs to be continuous, an ongoing development, and just sort of reiterated every year. One of the funny things or sad things here in Cordova is we've probably seen 6 different principals in 8 years. We've had 4 different ones in the last 4 years. In our continuity, we've had a variety of superintendents as well, so that continuity and leadership is just hurting. And, and I see a new principal coming in this year, and, I want to clone Mary. I want to connect our new principal up with Mary and all the, what is she's doing, and we talk about stress and whatnot on staff, and they're just trying to put out fires, at times. So that professional development needs to be continuous.
Thanks, Pete.
And this is Mary. I appreciate all of the compliments on my leadership. It's something that it's not all about Mary. However, I really work in a role right now where principals reach out to me so often that I'm actually considering and actually have started to create a webinar series that I will do monthly for principals to be able to just connect with one another and with me because it's so needed. And I'm willing to take that step because I'm one of those people that my philosophy is be the change, get out there and do something about it. And so I see this need, and I know that I have the capacity to create a collaborative effort around this important work. And so I'm working on that as we speak so that principals that feel alone and new to the profession that are in rural Alaska, as long as they have a way to get on the internet, they can connect with us live throughout Alaska in an ongoing, sustainable way, and it's just something I'm committed to. So thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Other conversation around the priorities. Is there one priority there that we think shouldn't be there? Are they, can we combine things? Other thoughts?
This is Maureen. Do we have anyone at the table that's an expert in the trauma-informed practices? Because we may have totally missed the mark on our priorities.
Well, I think we could engage maybe with Pat again and maybe Lori at some point in this subgroup to either maybe have a conversation with that subgroup that ends up working on this to talk through what might come forward from that committee.
I think that would be really helpful because it's like we all have a bit of smattering of knowledge around this, and we really need the people that are working on the front lines with it and know what works and what doesn't to advise us here, I think.
And this is Todd. Maureen, I think your point is well made. And we also have Sharon Fischel here at the department, who is our mental health counseling education specialist on my team. And she's worked hand-in-hand with Pat Sidmore for the better part of a year on on trauma-informed schools, and so she'll be a great asset, and I'll bring her into this fold as well.
Great, that sounds great. Other thoughts?
This is Marcy. I just want to talk out loud for a second. I don't know if this will make sense to folks, but I just want to throw it out there. I'm, you know, an advocate for early care and learning, and I'm kind of, I actually shared earlier that I really think that it should be elevated into a different category, but as I've listened to this conversation and I've been thinking throughout this process, I'm wondering if, because actually what it is early care and learning, or the early childhood and K through 12, they're actually two different systems. So, and the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council is charged with unifying the early care and learning system, or the early childhood system. And these two systems actually intersect when children, you know, either enter pre-K through the school district or through kindergarten. And the early care and learning system is really the foundational system, and then the K through 12 system builds on that. And so I'm just wondering if this priority number 4 should be taken out of here, but somehow conveyed as part of this overarching work that that's another system, an important system that intersects with the K through 12 system and is a critical piece.
Thanks, Marcy. Yes, I think we totally agree that that's not under the purview, but it is so important to include that piece, and how do we garner those partnerships to reach into that age group too.
Oh, this is Sarah. But we do have pre-elementary programs, pre-K programs within school districts across the state, so we would want to keep that, keep this priority engaged in terms of those programs. So I wouldn't want to get rid of it altogether. So there's two pieces. One is coordinating with the early learning providers across the state and that system, but also the pre-K providers that are within the school district.
Thanks, Sarah.
Sana, this is Laurie, and I just wanted to say that I think Pat had mentioned it earlier, and there's a group of statewide support people, I don't know what you would call us, but folks that have been working on trauma-informed school pieces, including Sharon Fischel and Pat Sidmore and Josh Arvidson and other folks, and our next meeting is October, I think, 11th, and if there's anything that we could bring to that group that might be helpful to this group, or if we can share resources, I just wanted to put that out there since someone had mentioned that earlier.
Yes, I think that that would be good to, when we
get close.
Well, we're going to, unfortunately, we have to have our recommendations prepared for October 4th, and I do want to remind everyone, well, I was going to do this at the end too, but the October 4th meeting again, which will be in Anchorage, so we need to have our recommendations firmed up to have ready to present in our group. We will have time again to talk through them and share information, but then during that day on October the 4th, we need someone from our committee, volunteers, that will actually present our recommendations from the Safety and Wellbeing Committee to the full group, to all the committees, to hear, and then they'll go formally to the state board. So that happens on October 4th. But like I said, maybe we can engage in some of those, the staff like Pat and Sharon and Lori, you, in this committee work prior to that to either review or come again and maybe speak with the committee as we work through the recommendation.
Sure, that sounds great, and if there's anything you want us to circulate with our group, we could do that too. I just wanted to put that out there.
Great, and I'll call you and we can have a conversation, or come over and see what might be helpful to put together for this kind of subcommittee. Any other thoughts about the trauma-informed priorities here?
This is Walt. Kind of looking at priority four there and the way I'm reading it, wouldn't that fold also in under the category four, student health? I mean, it's kind of a responsive kind of support thing for the entire health component.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense. The more trauma you can reduce in early childhood from prenatally onward, the healthier the student is going to be, mental and physical, down the road. So that fits nicely under that as well. But not something we'd be doing directly in schools, but encouraging entire communities and states to look at that piece carefully and recognize the connection.
So I think, this is Santa, so I think as we work together in these subgroups with each of these headings and categories, there may still be some crossovers or folding in of other pieces that could be encompassed in a recommendation for the other categories or to fold into the trauma-informed piece. So I think what I'll ask is, as we go forward here and start identifying which subgroup you may want to participate on, that we can have maybe a chair of the subgroup that would talk to the other two groups and think through and have some of those other conversations about, do we keep something separate? Does it fit under another category? Or how do we make sure we encompass all these pieces in a transformational high-level recommendation to the state board? Any other conversation or ideas, thoughts someone would like to share before I'm going to go around and ask you where or which committee you would like to participate on, subgroup? Okay, so I'm going to go around with a roll call and ask which subgroup or subcommittee that you would like to participate on. And I think James had to leave us, and he said he would be available to work with anyone or think through it. Keith, do you have a preference?
No, I don't. You can put me in as well, like James, as co-chairs, just where we need to fill in the gaps. I'm happy to step in.
Okay. Leona, do you have a preference for a working subgroup, either the trauma-informed practices, the school climate, or student health?
I don't know. It's either trauma-informed or student health. The student health, that's mental health too, right?
Yes.
Well, I'll do student health.
Okay. Thank you. Lily?
I think I'd like to do the school climate.
Okay, great. Thank you. Jennifer? Jennifer, I can barely hear you. I think you said trauma-informed.
Yes, it's Jennifer here. I could do trauma-informed or school climate.
Do you have a preference, or maybe we'll see how we how we end up with numbers?
That sounds good. I'll do either one.
Okay, thank you. Pete?
Trauma-informed practices.
Norma?
School climate.
Laura?
I could go with either trauma-informed or school climate, and you can put me on either based on numbers.
Okay, thanks. Marcy?
Trauma-informed, please.
Thank you. Walt?
Probably the trauma-informed, if that's where partnerships land.
Okay, thank you. Mary?
Big surprise, school climate.
Thank you. Sarah?
I like school climate.
Maureen?
School, the health piece.
Student health, okay. Jeff?
Climate, please.
Ew. And Lillian?
Student health.
Student health. All right, let's see what our numbers, and we have a couple people missing, so we can see if they want to join. Let's see.
Emma.
Is it Tyson and Aiden?
For category, the trauma-informed, we have Pete, Marcy, Walt, and potentially Jennifer or Laura. So that's one, two. That could be five. Let's see. So category three, the school climate, we have Lily, Norma, Mary, Sarah, and Jeff. And category four, which is the student health, we have Leona, Maureen, and Lillian. So let's move, if we get Jennifer or Laura, which one would like to go to the, you said one or three. Okay.
Yeah.
I think we're okay then. I think we're set. So we'll keep Jennifer or Laura. Why don't you both stay on the trauma-informed? And then we have Lily, Norma, Mary, Sarah, and Jeff on school climate, and Leona, Maureen, and Lillian on student health. And like I said, we have a couple more missing committee members that we may get to join. So I think what I'd like to do, we'll send these out. We'll send an email back out that confirms which subcommittee you're on. And I'm going to let each of the subcommittees tap a chairperson to call together a meetings for phone conversations that you can have. And I want to look at a date to have some draft language recommendations to look at and maybe put towards the full committee for each of those. I'm trying to grab a calendar here quickly.
So our fifth meeting is on September 27th.
Our fifth meeting is scheduled for September 27th. So we'd like to have something before that meeting. So maybe 2 weeks before, like this mid-week of September, to have something?
Yeah.
Maybe September 15th?
This is Mary. I just want to tell someone their cute little baby is being heard, so they might want to mute their phone. And is this to, for the committee work is really to look at the language that's already drafted and drafted even more?
Yes. The charge for each of the subcommittees would be to take the current language and think about the discussions today. And again, we'll send out some summary notes and minutes from this meeting and look at the current draft language. Is it transformational? How do we need to craft it to be transformational? And have we included all the pieces that were discussed at this meeting? And then to put forward draft recommendation and rationale behind what would come from this subcommittee to our full committee to discuss in our last meeting so we can have our finalize those recommendations going into the October meeting.
Say that one more time. We would put forward draft language.
Hi. Thank you. Someone either went on hold.
You said in rationale behind it. Could you put that, Santa, in the email to us so that we can have that as we work together in our committees? I'm sure you were already thinking that.
Yes, and I'm going to, what I'll do too is refer you back to the template that Jerry Covey had given us, and I'll attach that again. And it has a format for here's what, you know, the recommendation, and then we should have a statement of rationale to support that recommendation. And also, again, Todd and Sharon and myself, we can all help with looking at rationale, because some of the rationale should be some statistics around why do we think trauma-informed is the way to go, why do we think the school climate and student health, what did we learn in our in the information and research that we've talked about during these committee meetings.
Yeah, and I think Lori Graskin would be a great resource for the school climate.
Right, and we'll tap Lori to help us also. So each of the committees can have staff available too also to help look at some of the reasoning and justification or rationale behind that. But so let me try to state this again and make sure. Jerry, help me if I'm missing a piece here. But each subcommittee needs to meet over the next few weeks to look at current draft language with the goal being, is this a transformational recommendation, or how do we change or craft language to be a transformational recommendation under each of the categories, and including some of the other pieces that were discussed today. And that then the subcommittee would put forward a draft of a recommendation and the rationale behind that recommendation to the full committee. And I think, like I said, I think with a deadline of maybe September the 15th to then have it, we could send it out to the full committee so people could have it and think about it as we come together on September 27th to finalize that recommendation and rationale.
That is correct, Santa, and you can use Smartsheet to post your work so everyone can access it. What we're looking for is a brief goal statement, that's the what statement, and then the why do we need this is the rationale. And so we're not looking for action steps, we're looking for what and why. And that's what the information that I put together attempted to illustrate. Thanks.
So now that I'm thinking, I'm almost thinking we go back and let's tap somebody in each of these subgroups to be responsible for pulling the group together. In the trauma-informed, does anyone want to volunteer to be the kind of the chairperson of that subgroup to make sure the committee meets over the next couple of weeks to get their draft language together? And that's Pete, Marcy, Walt, Laura, Jennifer.
This is Laura. I'll go ahead and jump in just to get it together.
Thank you, Laura, for volunteering for that. Okay, so Laura Mulgrew will kind of be the point of contact, and I will share your emails with her so that she can get together a time that everyone can talk and start drafting their language. So the next school climate group, would anyone like to volunteer to be the chair for that? Mary, would you like to do that?
I would love to.
Thank you, Mary, for volunteering.
You're welcome.
And the category, the student health piece?
Lillian or Leona, unless you want to jump in there, I could do that. But I don't want to, you know, if anyone else feels called to that position.
Lillian, Leona, is that okay with you? Maureen volunteered to be the chair for that group.
That's great.
All right. Thank you. Yay. Okay. Thank you all for volunteering for that.
So again, then your responsibility, convene your group, however many times to work through the recommendations and the draft language. Again, sending them to Todd and myself and by the 15th so we can get them out to the entire committee to have time to think about it before we come together on September 27th. Other thoughts? Jerry, something else? Anything we've forgotten?
I don't think you've forgotten anything. It might be good if Todd were to participate in each of those subcommittees just so he could be so the department could keep abreast of the work that's being done.
Sounds great. Thank you.
I like that idea. This is Mary. Santa, my only question as someone who's going to be taking a lead on this is if you could just send the names out for each of the committees in an update or have someone do that.
Yes, we will get that out to you.
Thank you.
Hopefully this afternoon we'll try to put that together.
And the goal is to meet mid-September, correct?
No. Your goal is to meet or have a phone conversation or through emails, however the best mode of communication is to meet with the deadline of September 15th to have a draft of your subcommittee's recommendation rationale. So then we'll send it out to the full committee to have before them and to have thoughts or ideas or maybe a conversation about what might need to be edited or changed before we meet on September 27th to finalize them.
Oh, I'm glad I asked. Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. And please, anyone, please feel free to contact me. You've got my phone number on my emails. You have my email address. Or Todd, we are happy to talk through these things with you, but I know this is extra work and extra time, but again, I think as I started out, some of you may not have been on the phone when I first started, I said I really, I too feel so passionate about this and just really kind of hit me last night as I was reading through lots of information and thinking about what we're doing. And the weight, and not so much the weight, I shouldn't say it that way, but the difference that these recommendations can make for our students, I think is huge. So thank you for your work, your time, your effort. It is greatly appreciated. Any other thoughts, comments before we go?
Santa, I just want to say to the group, this is Mary again, I spent the entire day yesterday working directly with our school counseling team, our school psychologist, our school nurse, a grandmother, and two parents that the child was removed from came to the building too, for a student who was actively suicidal. And so I can't emphasize, everything we've talked about, this student has experienced significant trauma in her life. This student also has parents with drug addiction and who have been in prison. This, everything we've talked about today took my entire time and our leadership's time yesterday to pull together the resources. The grandmother took her to Providence in Anchorage as our recommendation unfolded, and we all worked together to take care of this student that desperately needed help. And so the work that we're doing, there's not one piece of what we talked about today that is not directly impacting and so critically important to saving lives of our young people in our state.
Yes, I totally agree. And that's, like I said, that was what I was going through too last night as I thought through and read through all of this information. It truly can and will save lives of students here. So. Other thoughts or comments before we go? Well, I have noon. We have noon here in Juna. So again, thank you so much and look forward to seeing the recommendations from each group. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.